Literally start to finish, I'm hanging on there every word because I don't get it. Like, it's almost the lack of understanding makes it more engaging. And, you know, I do want to pause it and I want to talk about it and I want to watch it again and I want to look up all these terms and videos explaining it to me and watch other films like it just to try and sort of grasp exactly what went on, sort of thing.
Bad hair. Why does everyone have a bad hair in this? They all have terrible hair. Ryan Gosling's wig is awful. Steve Carell's wig is awful. Christian Bale's wig is awful. They're all bad wigs. Hey everyone, joining Flicks Watcher today, we have Alice.
Hello.
Josh.
Hello.
And Kobe.
Hello.
And we're here to talk about and try to understand maybe The Big Short.
Thank you as always to the mighty people for their mighty, mighty tunes that you can hear right now. Thank you to Ben from Rockwood Audio for editing the podcast. And please do remember, guys, if you're listening, which you're doing, of course, because you can hear me speaking right now, head over to Spotify and Apple Podcasts to give us a 5-star rating and a glowing review. Join in the conversation with us on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcherPod. Or go to Instagram. We are at FlixWatcher.
Hello, film fans. Our guests today are Josh and Alice. Over to you, please, Josh, to tell the listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Yeah, so my name's Josh and this is my co-host Alice. We host a weekly film podcast called Just Films and That, where we talk about films that we think deserve a little bit more love. So they might be underrated, they might be underseen. Every now and then we do a classic film as well that we might not have seen, or a listener's suggestion. Sometimes we have guests on, all manner of films. But the main thing we do is underrated and underseen films.
Can you give us a couple of examples of underrated films?
Ooh.
Speed 2, cruise control.
No, nope, not that one. Alice, can you just mute Alice's microphone, please?
Incredibly underrated. I could talk.
I mean, yeah, when we did... Alice, you picked some ones that have had like less than 10% on Rotten Tomatoes, haven't you? Speed 2 as one. Was it the number 23 you picked?
Number 23 gets about 8%, I think. Yeah, very bad, very bad.
Yeah, so what have we done recently? So we've got an episode coming out. It might be out by the time this is out, on a film I chose called Sing Street, which I think is unseen, which is a brilliant little Irish sort of 80s musical film.
John Carney film. We've had it on here.
Oh, have you? What did you guys think?
Yeah. Pretty decent. I didn't like the songs, but everyone else loved the songs. I loved everything else apart from the songs.
Music's so subjective, isn't it? In terms of underrated, then, I'm trying to think if we had any like that really criminally underrated.
So Grease 2, Speed 2, the number 23.
Sensing a thing with 2 in the title.
I know, yeah, a lot of sequels.
Spider-Man 2. What's wrong with Grease 2, sorry?
There's nothing wrong with Grease 2. It's wonderful and phenomenal, and I don't understand why it's regarded as one of the worst films of all time. I just don't get it.
I think I'm outnumbered here, so I'll stay quiet.
I've never seen it, so, you know, I just laugh and go, I have no idea.
Oh, it's so much fun. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. I 100% would recommend that. That's getting a 5 out of 5 for recommended.
The thing we did decide it was underrated, because even though I didn't like it, it absolutely got absolutely caned, didn't it? So we were like, well, it's not that bad.
Not sure that's the same underrated and slated. Like, things can like slip under the radar, but a lot of people can say that it's shit though.
And this is the whole thing, is that, you know, it's all subjective. So we've picked films before and people, you know, we've got absolute pelters on things like on Twitter, X, formerly known as Twitter, but where they'll see things like, there's no way that's underseen or underrated. Like, for example, I picked True Lies, right? And you couldn't get hold of it anywhere. So it made loads of money at the time. It's really well rated. But it was when I say you couldn't get hold of it, I mean you couldn't even pay for it.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't even pay for it on Prime.
Well, we had that we talked about it for quite a while to try and get Casino, which is now on Amazon Prime. But for like years, it was just like...
Disappeared.
I want to watch Casino. I've not seen it since it first came out. I really can't remember. How can I watch this? Yeah.
How did you find True Lies in the end?
I have it on DVD.
I had to use illicit means that I'm not proud of. But I wanted to pay for it. I'm here ready to pay.
She made me act it out, all right? Well, I'm admitting it here. She made me act the whole thing out.
You just said it. I'm like, I'd love to watch it again.
That was my favourite bit. To act out, I mean, not to watch.
Well, here we're talking about The Big Short. We can determine whether it's been underseen, underrated. Alice, this is your choice. Can you tell us why you chose The Big Short? And then I'll get the timer out. You've got 60 seconds to tell us what the synopsis is. I don't know.
Okay.
Is that enough time?
Are we doing the synopsis first?
We'll do the why you picked it first.
Okay. I just flipping love it. I absolutely love this film. I'd already seen it a couple of times and I was just like buzzing to watch it again, to be honest. And I feel like every time I watch it, I learn something new and try and sort of add to my very thin grasp on what is the financial situation, the stock market and all that sort of thing. I also love films that are based on a true story. Emotionally, the stakes are always just so much higher for me and I just connect with it much quicker, which just makes it much more of a kind of emotive experience for me, I guess. And obviously just some fantastic performances in there as well by some fantastic actors. For me, it has everything. It has everything and I love it.
Awesome. So the timer starts now.
Okay, so The Big Short is based on a true story and is about various investors and hedge fund managers in the US basically realizing a couple of years before 2008 that the housing bubble, which has been created by giving out mortgages to just about anyone, will inevitably burst, causing one of the biggest financial disasters in history. So they want to make the most of it by betting against it. They can see the signs and they dig a little deeper and come to realize just how messed up the situation is. So we follow various characters through the story and discover more about their involvement and interest in the issue as they uncover the gross and hard to swallow details about the whole fiasco. And we've got a fabulous cast in there, like I said, that includes Christian Bale, Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling, Brad Pitt, and many, many more.
Many, many more. Brad Pitt, I forgot was in this.
Yeah, same. I always forget. I always forget he's in this.
Josh, underrated, underseen, what are your thoughts?
I'd have to look at the ratings. I mean, when it came out, there was a lot of Oscar buzz around it, wasn't there? So I don't think it was particularly underrated. It's fairly...
I love it, Josh, and it's not underrated. Like, it's very right. Okay, well rated.
As far as I know, it's very well rated. In terms of underseen, I think, you know, the subject matter could probably be quite isolating for people. It's like, it's one of those things like, you know, unless you're interested in it, are you going to go and see it? Or unless you have an interest in a director or an actor or someone involved in it, would you go and see it? So I bet if you look at maybe the box office or maybe how many the streaming numbers and stuff, I bet it may be underseen. I'd be really interested to know if you could get the streaming numbers, how many people started this and went, what, after a bit and then stopped watching it. Not because it's bad. It's a very, very good film. But like how many people because you see who's in it and you think, oh, great cast. Tell you what, Saturday night, takeaway, glass of wine, pop it on and then maybe go, I've got to concentrate for this. It's not for right now sort of thing. But no, it's a very well-made film, but I'd love to know the numbers of how many people went, should we just put Jumanji on or something? You know, like, instead.
Which Jumanji?
Any of them.
In terms of films in this era, in this genre, that I would imagine is very much underseen is Dumb Money. And I even said the phrase Dumb Money at one point. So that might be a future film for you guys to pick up in this era. But I think this is seen enough, and I think the rating for this was generally quite high. Helen, have you seen this before?
Yes, I have seen it before. I didn't see it at the cinema. I can't remember when I watched it, but I've definitely seen it. I mean, I'm going to stick my neck out and say I think it's a little overrated. I kind of feel as though I have a little bit of an issue with the director.
Adam McKay, interesting.
Yeah, I think most people watch this. It was basically sold to a lot of people because of the scene with Margot Robbie in the bathtub. And I think that has literally carried its popularity through in that was all everyone talked about was basically Margot Robbie's in the bathtub. She's explaining whatever it is she's explaining. I can't even remember what it is now.
I think it's how mortgage bonds work, isn't it?
Something like that. Something really boring and she's in the bathtub.
She's talking about subprime loan mortgages.
That's it, yeah.
Like all these words, they mean nothing to me. I've seen it twice. I still really, really, really don't know what happened other than just men and money, suits, bad hair. Why does everyone have a bad hair in this? They all have terrible hair. Ryan Gosling's wig is awful. Steve Carell's wig is awful. Christian Bale's wig is awful. They're all bad wigs. Jeremy Strong's in it. Sort of feels like a little bit of a Succession kind of audition tape it could be. It's got like a weird moment where you're like, oh, this is like Crazy Stupid Love, except the version about subprime loans. Yeah, and it was all about the thing that he likes to do is breaking the fourth wall. So there was all of those kind of like buzzy things that were kind of happening.
You mean Ryan Gosling's character?
Yeah, and Selena Gomez. There's a bit where Selena Gomez explains something else, CDOs, FDOs.
Well, all those guys, all those inset guys, they break the fourth wall. So obviously Margot Robbie's talking to us. Anthony Bourdain's talking to us, Selena Gomez and the guy.
And another guy who's like an economist or something, isn't he?
Yeah, what I mean by the inset guys is there's Selena Gomez and the other person. So those guys explaining to us, they're breaking the fourth wall. The only person that breaks the fourth wall who's the main character is Ryan Gosling. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your issue with Adam McKay?
So...
He's not like a mate.
The comedy stuff I'm kind of like fine with, but I find with this and also with Don't Look Up that... I find he comes off a little bit smug and...
Did he direct Don't Look Up?
Yeah. Mm. I don't feel he has much compassion for the people in it. And the tone of this is very Wolf of Wall Street-y. Basically like, ha-ha, you Americans, you all got fucked. You're all stupid. It's your fault. And I don't know. I feel that the tone of... There's a lot of like funny, jokey bits. And then there's a lot of quite serious information, and like the impact of the entire financial crash was like huge. Like we all like suffered from it, and it kind of feels like it was all like a bit of a bro joke from this. So that's also what I felt a little bit with Don't Look Up. So that's like me and his two films. And I haven't seen Vice, and I'm probably not going to see that one just because I don't know.
So it's the I don't want to say resurrection, but the revised Adam McKay that you have issues with rather than the Anchorman.
I've not seen that. And if you'd like to know how I feel about Step Brothers, you can also listen to our podcast on that one. But that wasn't for me. But, you know, that kind of humour, it exists in a world and people love it. And, you know, it works in that. But with this and with Don't Look Up, I'm a bit like, I don't know. I don't know if you're for me.
Do you like Succession?
Yes.
Yeah, because he produces that.
Yeah, I was going to say that. And that's, with Jeremy Strong.
But he didn't write that. So
I think he's written bit of it and directed bits of it, but no, it's all Jesse Armstrong in it.
I think he directed the first episode, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he's definitely directed an episode, because I was looking at it before I came on this, but no. It's difficult to do satire without coming across as smug, because a lot of satire is going, I know better than you. Do you know what I mean? It's... It can come across difficult. Like, obviously, for me, Pitch Perfect satire would be Armando Iannucci and The Thick of It and stuff like that. And you know, that doesn't come across as like it's either talking down to you or anything like that. But I could see how you could watch this and completely get that reaction in terms of the way it comes across, in terms of, well, actually, if you look at what actually happened, you know, people lost their livelihoods and stuff like that. So I do get that. I personally really, really like Adam McKay, but, you know, it's subjective, isn't it?
Who did the other guys?
Adam McKay
as well. Alice, you said you can way smarter. Can you explain that, expand on that side of things each time you watch it?
I think finally this time around, this is the third or fourth time I've watched it, I think I finally understood what Christian Bale's character is trying to do. So I already understood the bits about the mortgages, because I know we were doing it in this country a little bit, where we were giving, like getting people like 99% mortgages or something, where you only had to have a 1% deposit. And so people were getting mortgages who perhaps couldn't necessarily keep up with the payments. And then, so that's sort of what was going on over there. And then all the, instead of separating the mortgage bonds so that you had some in there that were definitely going to pay off and then some that would fail, they just started putting all the ones that were going to fail all together and selling those off to, I guess, the banks and stuff. But then what I finally realised this time around, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but this is what I figured out that Christian Bale's character is doing. So I tried to use this analogy to try and help me understand it. So say I went to an insurance company and I said to them, I want you to insure me against getting kidnapped by a unicorn, right? Something that's never going to happen. So the banks go, or the insurance company goes, okay, then I'll do that. Why would I not? And then I say, well, what if you insure me for £200 million for that? And they're like, well, okay, but you're going to have to pay us like £2,000 a month or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But they don't think it's ever going to happen, because nothing like that has ever happened before. It's a work of fiction sort of thing. But then it happens, and then they have to pay me. And that's what I think Christian Bale's character was doing.
And also, his bosses were pissed off because they were like saying, why are we paying £2,000 a month for something that's not going to happen? So they were angry at him because they're paying money out of the fund, which they don't have, which they have, but not, you know, to spend frivolously. But also, the banks were like, I mean, well, just take your money if you want, not bad.
But it was
I think that's a great way to explain it.
It's, oh, good. Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad that makes sense. But for me, it's just so weird. And there's a lot of moments in this, obviously, that are just like infuriating because you think, how the hell has that been allowed to happen or whatever? But to have the banks so sure of themselves to think, oh, no, this will never happen. And obviously, with Christian Bale's character and a couple of the other characters as well, they can all see how the chess pieces are lining up. They can see, like, there is no way that this is sustainable. And he started seeing it in 2005 or so. And for them to just kind of laugh it off and be like, and for me, who's got such a very, like I said, a very thin grasp on how all this stuff works, if you give out tons of mortgages to people who can't afford to pay them back, that is going to come back and bite you on the ass. Like, that seems so obvious to me. So the fact that these, like, bankers or whoever it was were just like, ah, no, it's never going to happen. We're fine. The housing is great. Housing's secure. Housing's always going to make you money. Like, it's just a bit like, what? Like, how could you have not seen it coming? It's crazy. And just a real reminder that just because someone is incredibly powerful and incredibly wealthy doesn't mean they're incredibly smart.
I think, honestly, that's a really good way of explaining it. And it's helped me latch in there as well. So great. On this, I think it's my second watch watching this. The first time I was like angry at everyone on the screen, but also this time I was watching, it's like, it's not like, I mean, Steve Carell's character was the epitome of this. He was like, we can't do anything about it, so we might as well make money from it in a way. And it sounds like people are going to loot, you know, they sent people out to Florida, to Miami to see what was going on there. And it was rough. And, you know, he had that conversation with those guys who were properly like, yeah, I've got a yacht and all this kind of stuff. And he was like, I don't get it. Why are they giving it away all their secrets? And they were like, no, they're actually just bragging. Those are the bad guys in this film. They're the ones that don't care. They're the ones that are selling the bonds. But the Steve Carell and Christian Slater and Ryan Gosling, they just, and those two guys in the garage and Brad Pitt, they're like, I see what's happening. We can make money from this. I don't condone it, or rather wish it wasn't happening, but also, you know, we can make money from this. And it's kind of like, what would you do if you know you could make money from this thing that's going to happen anyway? It's like, well, you'd perhaps do it, because you're better rich than not, I guess. And that's not going to stop people being poor, isn't it?
It's so important to have those characters in this, because I think without that and without them, you would just feel completely demoralised about the whole thing from start to finish. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the film, but it is quite demoralising. And I do come away from it feeling a little bit like upset and pissed off sort of thing. But at least with Steve Carell's character, it's about, you, they haven't caused this. They're not the ones who are trying to sort of create this situation, but they are just exploiting it and making the most out of it. And that is somewhat forgivable. And obviously, Steve Carell's character especially does have a lot of very human moments. Like, we see his relationship with his wife. We know that his brother committed suicide and that's something that's really affected him. So he's probably like the most human character in the whole thing. And whether all that stuff is true or not, and that's really how they felt, you know, we'll never know. But I think they at least ground the story a little bit and just help you remember, okay, it's not just everyone being evil and wah-ha-ha. It's like, let's just screw everybody else as long as we get our payday sort of thing, which makes it just a little bit more digestible and a little bit less traumatising.
On this rewatch for me as well, I noticed at the end, some of the people we'd met during the film, coming back and seeing how they've related to. So the guy, when they met him in Miami, who didn't realise paying his landlord the rent, but the landlord wasn't paying the mortgage. Then you see them living out of the car with his family. I was just like, that's what's happened here. And then you see the two guys who are bragging about the yachts, then looking for a job in like a job market type kind of place. So even those guys have been affected. Feel less sorry for them, of course, but it's still like, it's hit a lot of people at a lot of different levels. And even the guys in the banks, like Deutsche Bank, these are people living their lives. A lot of these people don't know what's going on underneath them, and suddenly they've been kicked out. And in New York, I know that one of my friends has got a company in New York, and he's saying, look, I don't condone it, but I can just fire someone no matter how long they've been working for me, and they've got to be out that day. There's no kind of like months severance or anything like, which is horrific to me. So that's what's happening in New York. They're just like kicking people out. So a lot of people, a lot of different levels were being hit by this. So that, as well as understanding more, it's actually see more of the effects of people at different levels. And it's super tough and eye-opening, I guess, as well. Going deep here. But it was quite funny in places as well.
I think Alan McKay is quite good at that. He's quite good at bringing levity and brevity to serious situations, even with the other guys. The other guys has got a, say it's Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg doing their thing and all that. But even at the end, it makes a big point about police pensions and how they're treated versus people like in this, so CEOs and bankers and stuff like that. So he is quite good at dressing up serious subject matter in a funny way. It just depends whether or not you get the point of what he's saying, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of time he interjected that at conference, asking the questions. Obviously, it's done with a comedic edge, but also it's done with insight and, like, you don't know what you're talking about, mate, on the stage.
Mm.
So it's a bit, when he's on the stage, it's a bit when he's in the audience, and both times underpinned by levity, but also that levity was grounding the, I guess, the horror that was about to unfold for a lot of people. Is there anything else guys want to say before we head to the scores? I mean, Helen, you talked about the Crazy Stupid Love tie-in. Do you want to just elaborate on that before we head to the...
Just a film where Marissa Tomei, Ryan Gosling and Steve Carell were all in together, and it's nice to see them together in another film. Their hair was much better in that. They looked a lot better. I was just going to say, like, I find it really, like, interesting when we watch films like this to look back at, like, mobile phones. Like, Blackberries were really a thing, weren't they?
I've only recently watched Blackberry, you know, the film that about Blackberry, yeah, that came out. And that's, yeah, even that, you're like, oh, yeah, I remember actually typing stuff.
And the like, how real-time information was, like, received there and then, as opposed to how it might be now.
Do you guys, like, do you feel like when you watch this, you get what happened? Like, because Alice obviously explained it really well there, but I still don't fully understand it. I understand a little bit more about what happened in this country, but even now I'm like, I'm not sure. Even before we came on, I was watching a video about, like, calls of, like, what does The Big Short mean or something like that. And it was like, even then it didn't explain it half as well as Alice did, because it just goes, it's one of those YouTube videos that just explains it with all the jargon. And you're like, I need you to explain it to me like I'm five.
Absolutely. You've got to simplify it.
How many apples do I have, and how many apples do you have?
Yeah.
Like, the mortgage thing, like, the bad mortgages is, like, fine. But then it's like, but what are you betting against, and what, and then why did all the places disappear in one go, and then what happened?
All the places?
Well, like, all the, like, the organisations, like, all the banks that just went,
all the banks,
this bank is no more. Like, oh, where did all the money go?
The bit that ties in with that, Helen, is the concept of the short, where we can bet against a company, or you bet on the company failing, or bet on the system failing. I understand that that's what a short is, but in my mind I'm like, why is that a thing? Why is it a thing that you can bet against something crap happening? So in my head that's like, why can this happen? But if you watch Dumb Money, they're betting against, you know, what's Dumb Money, and a similar thing happens but from a more positive point of view. So I'm getting my head around that, but to answer your question, Josh, in the moment when it's happening in the film, I'm like, I can kind of get it. But if someone was to ask me afterwards, I'd be like, I don't know. No, just leave me alone. And that bit where Selena Gomez is explaining with The Economist about the CDOs, that I just have no idea what's going on in that section whatsoever.
They use gambling, which is, like, even more, like, confusing for me. I'm like, this is not the right analogy here. Yeah, like, you're talking about gambling now. I really don't understand that. So if you talk about that and you're trying to explain something else I don't understand, I don't know.
It's like, it just reminds me, so my sister, so if we're ever home for Sunday dinner, do you ever listen to, like, the radio? There's a chart show on, I think it's Paul Gambaccini, and it's on a Saturday or a Sunday, I think it's a Sunday, and he does the chart from a year, but he explains where it is the week that corresponds to where you are, where it's come from, but he also says what it will get to. Obviously, it's in the past. So it'll be like, you know, he'll be doing You Spin Me Right Round by Dead or Alive, currently at number 2, we'll get to number 1, and started at number 36. And my sister, every time she's there, goes, it's like he's talking another language. I don't understand what he's saying. And every time we keep going, so it's where it is now in the week in 1985, whenever it is. It's where it started, and her eyes just glaze over, and you're like, and it's where it will, never mind. Like, that's what I feel like doing this film. But I can't do maths, so maybe it's that.
Maybe it's that. Should we head to the scores, guys?
Yeah.
I'm Sam Clements, host of the 90 Minutes or Less Film Festival, another podcast in the Stripped Media family. a podcast that celebrates movies under 90 minutes long. Each episode, I'm joined by a special guest who selects a movie to join our prestigious lineup. Past guests have included fellow Stripped Media family members Martin and Sam from Song by Song, and Kobe from Flixwatcher, and Dave from The Wire Stripped. Search for us now on the app you're currently listening to this podcast, or join us at 90minfilmfest.com.
So welcome to our Flixwatcher scores. They are always out of five. You can have decimal places. And we'll start with you, please, Alice, as it was your choice with your recommendability.
I feel like it's a five because I feel like I do completely understand what Josh was saying about the subject matter might not be to everyone's taste, but I think that the vehicle of it, the way that the film's executed, is it's at least trying to get you to understand, and that's what all the breaking the fourth wall is for, and that's why we have like Ryan Gosling's character who's there. He's trying to hold your hand through it so you can at least get to the next bit of the film having some idea of what's going on. I feel like it's really fast paced, it's got really good energy, and the editing is like incredible and is one of the best things about the film. So for me, I would be thrilled if someone recommended this to me, but I love films about this sort of thing anyway. Like, I've seen all of the kind of Wall Street and stock market and financial crisis, all that sort of thing. I've watched countless documentaries about it because I'm just obsessed with it as a topic and I don't really know why. And
have you watched Dumb Money?
Yeah, loved it. Went to the cinema for it. Love Paul Dano anyway. So that was, I was a huge fan of that. So yeah, it's a five from me for that.
You seem like you're embarrassed to suggest, but go with your heart, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's one of those films that, you know, obviously it depends what you're looking for in terms of why you recommend a film. It depends on someone's interests and stuff like that. For me, I think it's one of those films, it's probably quite important that people watch it, or if there's other better films around this subject matter, maybe you could recommend them instead. But I think it's really good. So I would give it a four for me.
Helen?
Yeah, I'm also going to give it a four. I think it is probably best to kind of like sell it maybe on the cast rather than like trying to explain what it's about, because most people will understand the financial crash and you just go, you know, it's got Ryan Gosling in it, Brad Pitt's in it, he's got a beard, but you know, he's in it, and Steve Carell's in it, he's doing serious this time, and there's like,
well, it's just not doing over Margot Robbie.
Yeah, so you know, you probably won't understand it, but like, you know, It all happened. So I was reading, because I'm quite fascinated between like when things are set on real instance, how true they are. And someone said like, it's basically like something like 94% completely accurate. So in terms of like creative license, there's not much being sort of held here. It's all pretty much as it happened and based on, I think some of the characters might be like different names or something, but it's all based on their kind of like quite close hand accounts.
I'm going 4.2, and I think more because of what Josh is saying. I think it's, there are films which are recommended because you know they're going to be a romp and anyone at a drop of a hat can watch it and enjoy it. But I think this is quite an important one to watch and try to absorb. So I'll be like, if you've not watched it, watch it. And I won't caveat it with the cast, because I think, also leaning back to what Josh is saying, if you say it's got Brad Pitt and Steve Carell and Marissa Tomei in it, you'd be like, you're almost setting yourself up for a different film. I would definitely explain it. There's some serious kind of stuff going on here, so don't expect to, you know, laugh riot, but they will entertain you if you're ready to go with it.
You could lie and say it's related to Crazy Stupid Love.
But then people duck out straight away.
You could be like, Ryan Gosling's in it, Steve Carell's in it, Marissa Tomei's in it. Oh, like Crazy Stupid Love. Yep.
Exactly. Like,
but then they would dive out. Then they'd do that thing you talked about where after 10 minutes, it's like, there's no, Steve Carell hasn't jumped out of a car yet. We need to...
Ryan Gosling has not slapped Steve Carell once.
Yeah, once, yeah. Although in this film, if he'd have done it, that would have been very, very
really
apt.
Funny, yeah.
And also a different tone. Repeat viewing score, Alice.
I mean, definitely a five. I think you need to watch it more than once just to try and understand what on earth is going on. I've seen it, like I said, 3 or 4 times now, and I would definitely watch it again. So yeah, I'm going for a five for that.
Josh.
Yeah, I mean, I still don't fully understand it, so I think it's probably good that I keep watching it. So I'm going to give it I'd probably give it a 4.5 on that one.
Helen?
So I don't think I would have watched this again had you not suggested it. And definitely the time had elapsed where I was like, if I remember vaguely things happening, but I really don't know what's going on. Am I going to watch it again? Probably not. But yeah, I think if anything is a testament, Alice, to you having watched it 5 times and it begins to make sense, then like if you can watch it that many times, then you may become, like Alice, a financial expert and may be able to explain to other people these kind of things. So, you know, it's a skill you could learn. I don't know if that's going to be me. So a 3.5 for repeat.
It's still pretty high. I'm going to go for a 4. I'm not going to watch it often, but I think it's an important one to watch. Something like this will happen again at some point, whether I'm alive to see it, who knows? Just because people are fucking horrible people, aren't they? They just want to make money. The banks weren't making enough money, you know, so they had to make more.
Our whole economy is based on the housing market, and we're currently a generation of people who won't be able to stop working because we won't be mortgage free. So I'd imagine it'll happen around then.
And haven't they they've just announced that they're going to bring back the 1% deposits as well. Yeah. Like that's but something they're seriously looking into.
2p on national insurance, Alice. Come on, 2p.
Oh, that'll do it. That'll save you.
I think in the UK, it wasn't necessarily the 100% mortgages, although they were still a bit like, some mortgages were 120%, so you could get more mortgage than you actually could afford in the UK. That was the thing, that was the real, like,
what?
Is this a good idea, guys?
Oh, my God. Didn't know that.
Yeah. Did you not know that?
No, I didn't know that. Oh, God, yeah.
It's like, get a house, go on holiday. Bish, bash, bash.
That's crazy. That is wild. Oh,
and we don't build enough bloody houses that are affordable.
Oh, my goodness.
Have you tried looking at new builds? Yes, if I had 500 grand.
So I think the 100%, I think hopefully they've got some more ring fence around that. And I think a lot of it is based on the fact that people can pay rent, and the rent often is more than your mortgage will be. It's just like, so if you can get off that onto that step, then that's hopefully what they're trying to do. But still, I don't know. The housing market is fucked.
It's all insane, yeah.
Small screen score. Alice.
I'm going for 5 again. I don't think it's a trend happening. I know, I don't know. I'm trying to sort of remove myself from it emotionally. The problem is I just really love the film.
No, but this is your scores.
I'm not asking you to represent
represent 8 billion people in the world. This is your scores.
Could you give it a 6, Alice?
Yeah, I'll give it a 6 out of 5. Because it's not allowed.
It would break the FlixWatcher podcast.
The spreadsheet would go down.
Okay. We don't want that. We don't want the spreadsheet crisis of 2024. But I think it's because it's not relying heavily on visual effects or anything like that. It is, so much of it is about the words. It is about the performances. And I think you can enjoy that on the screen on your phone or at the cinema. I didn't see this one at the cinema, but then when I have watched it sort of just at home on the television on streaming, it's just, I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything by not seeing it in the cinema. It's all about the words and it's all about how the story develops. And I think that would be the same whether you're watching it on a phone or on the big screen.
Josh?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think I'd give it a 5 as well. It's all about the content, not the visuals. If anything, it might actually be better watching it at home because you could take notes.
Pause. Just right. Yeah. Hold on. What was that?
Right, I think 5. Yeah. I mean, there's no reason why. Same as Alice, I didn't see this in the cinema, but I can't see what watching it in the cinema would take away. Apart, obviously, you know, unless you're a prick, you won't be on your phone in the cinema, so you couldn't be distracted. But even then, you know, as long as you concentrate whilst you're watching it, then there's no reason why it couldn't be enjoyed just as much.
Helen.
Yeah, I didn't see this at the cinema either, so I'm also going to give
What's
it a 5.
What's wrong with you people?
I just didn't like, I was like, oh, I don't know what this is about.
Too skinned from the financial crisis.
What is a Big Short? No idea. And the other thing is, watching at home, you like if you're at the cinema and someone goes, oh, so what was your overview of that? You don't have to be embarrassed in front of all the people in the cinema as you're shuffling out and you go, I don't know, I really don't understand. You can be a thicko at home and no one will know.
That just reminded me as well. I did pause it like a handful of times and then turn to my husband and just be like, right, so here's how I understand what just happened. And we'd sort of talk it through a little bit and then start it again. I don't know if we were accurate or not, but I just felt like I needed to sort of get it out there and get my thoughts out there just to see, it's like, am I getting this?
I can understand because there's a lot it kind of builds up on, right? It might almost be better, and I'm sure it will happen at some point, to be presented as a miniseries. So you can just go, okay, they presented the concept of a short and that's the end of this episode. And now you can go away and like learn what a short is before then going to the next lesson episode and learn what a CDO is and subprime is and stuff like that. So I think that's kind of interesting that you can pause it. On this rewatch, one thing that also I thought as a point of interest is that a lot of these people, well, so Ryan Gosling's for the two guys in the garage, and obviously Steve Carell's film via Ryan Gosling, they all found it by accident or because it's one person, Dr. Burry, who like came up with the idea, well, realised this was happening, and it kind of just filtered in the ether. I want to know how much that was real, actually. That's one thing I meant to check out, is that how much of these guys are just super lucky to find this dossier in the lobby of a bank, or people just talking about this madman they just met trying to get insured against unicorns kidnapping them and he being an easy mark or easy money. So I think for me, you know, not small screen score, just something I want to get out of my head because I was thinking about it now, and hopefully I will do some research on that. Engagement score, Alice.
Yeah, it's a 5. Sorry, it's very predictable.
What?
But, I love it.
I put it in there before you even said it.
Literally, start to finish, I'm hanging on their every word because I don't get it. Like, it's almost the lack of understanding makes it more engaging. And, you know, I do want to pause it and I want to talk about it and I want to watch it again and I want to look up all these terms and videos explaining it to me and watch other films like it just to try and sort of grasp exactly what went on, sort of thing. So, yeah, I think story-wise and presentation-wise, yeah, 5 out of 5.
I think it's important there to say you don't get it, but also it does make sense. There is something to get. It's not like a gobbledygook thing, right? That's the important thing. So there are some films which just don't make any sense, and you're like, no, yeah, this is bollocks. I'm gonna tap out. But this, like, it makes sense. There is a thing to it. It just might not. It might be hard to penetrate, and that's where I guess the engagement factor is, because you like, I want to understand what's going on here.
Yeah, exactly. Because you think if you watch it enough or if you listen hard enough, you will get it. Because you have to get it because it actually happened. So it happened for a reason. So it's just like, if I just watch it one more time, I'm going to get it. And I'm just waiting for that to happen.
Josh, engagement score.
It really depends what mood I'm in. You know, if I want to switch my brain off on a Saturday night, am I going to put this on or am I going to put Con Air on? It's Con Air, isn't it? But I think, you know, overall, let's say, depending on what mood I'm in, if I'm into it, you know, it's going to be higher. But let's say, to average it out, 3.8.
Helen?
Yeah, I think you've got to be into it. I did listen really hard as well, but still stuff that I'm just like, I just don't really get it. But for engagement, yeah, you have to listen really hard. That's what you have to do. And like, you have to follow what's going on. Maybe a little bit of pausing if you need to do some looking up on Wikipedia what it all means. I don't know. So I'm going to give it a 4.5 for engagement, in that like, you're not going to have any clue what's going on if you're faffing about on your phone.
So was that 4.5?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll join on the 4.5 party. Well, why am I tapping? Where is that going? Where's that? It's not filled in the cell. 4.5. Yeah, I'll join in 4.5. And that gives an overall score of 4.51250. Way higher than I thought it was going to be before we came into the recording. Should we head to Twitter?
Yes.
So, yeah, let's head over.
Let's head to Twitter. So do follow us, guys, on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcherPod. And do follow us because we talk about films. But also, before we go to record a film such as this, we do put a shout out asking for you guys to give a comment on the film. So look out for a tweet saying something similar to, we are reviewing The Big Short with Alice and Josh from @FilmsThat. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and your score out of 5 stars for an on-air shout out. So we had a couple of comments, and Alice's Twitter is broken, so we have to ask Josh to read these 2 comments.
Yes, so this is one from E-Tims. They said, great film, taking an important yet dry subject and characters and making them highly watchable. A great double bill with Margin Call. Then when you asked them how many stars, they said 4 out of 5. Then the next one down is from someone called Minnesota Froggy. And I think Alice might have written this because it says 5 out of 5, 5 stars. It's a movie that you're willing to see again and again, even though the subject matter will piss you off. And that's because of the cast, the dialogue and the performances. I think they mean the subject matter will piss you off, but not because of the cast.
The cast. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, so they're very, very highly rated there, 4s and 5s.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that ties in with what we have here. Josh, Alice, can you tell us where we can find you guys online and say goodbye to the listeners?
Yes, so we host a weekly podcast called Just Films and That, where we mainly focus on films that we think deserve more love, whether that's because they're underrated or underseen. And you can get that every Tuesday wherever you get your podcast. And you can find us on social media if you just put Just Films and That in on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube and TikTok, and you'll be able to find us.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
It's been a pleasure talking to you about The Big Short.
Oh, thank you very much for having us.
And learning about unicorns, kidnap insurance.
Financial unicorns.
I'm glad that that struck. I'm glad that that hit, because that's the way, that is how I made sense of it in my brain. So I'm glad I was able to translate that over to everyone.
Well, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks for having us, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Bye. Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes and Rockwood Audio's editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.